Hello and welcome to the Dad Up Radio Show. This is a father-friendly, father-focused space to empower fathers and father figures to strengthen the connection between their children and themselves. I am your host, Seamus Gordon. Let's dad up. All right. Well, happy Monday, everybody. Happy Monday. It is not only a new day, it's a new month. Charles, we have been here for over a month now. It doesn't feel like it.
Time flies.
When you're having fun.
Yes.
Welcome to the Dad Up Radio Show, everyone. We have the honor, the privilege of being able to come to you every day, Monday to Friday, 8:30 a.m., like we are right now, and come back again, 8:30 p.m., to speak to and with our fathers and father figures. We have a special guest in the house this morning. And you know, when you go to Disney, you see, or Universal Studios, thing one, thing two. So we have a Charles and a Charles in the house. So I'll say Charles one, Charles two. Charles Spaeth is in the house. My brother, welcome.
Good morning. Good to
welcome.
Be here. Thanks for having me.
We'll be hearing more about you and from you in a minute. But let me just remind our listening audience, and for those who are joining us for the very first time, we follow an acronym called SPIES. Every day of the week, we focus on a particular area of dads' lives. On Mondays, we focus on the spiritual aspect, S. On Tuesdays, we focus on the physical well-being, the P. On Wednesdays, we focus on the intellectual / mental health. On Thursdays, the E, the emotional. And then on Fridays, we look at the social well-being of fathers and father figures. This program seeks to empower fathers to become better spies. Because when we invest in fathers, we're actually investing in kids.
Yes.
So, today, Charles, welcome. Not this Charles, the other one, Charles Spaeth. Welcome to this show. I have no doubt that what we'll be talking about this morning will resonate with most of our listeners. Today, I want us to look at a passage from the scripture. It's one that I believe most of us have heard before. There was a dad who had a son who wasn't well. Mark chapter 9. He brought the son to the church, to the disciples, so that they could do something. They couldn't. They should have been able to, because they were empowered by Jesus himself. But they couldn't. So there was a whole uproar, and Jesus intervened and spoke to the dad. I wanted to look at verse 21, because as a father, I like how God interacts with us. Jesus said to the father, how long has this been happening to him? Now, you know Jesus didn't have to ask that question. But I believe he intentionally wanted to engage dad in a conversation. He didn't just jump to bring the dead boy over here or bring the sick boy and healed him. Dad, how long has he been like this? I don't know the last time you went to a doctor and he sat down, not looking at his computer, but looking at you and saying, how are you doing? Really, Jesus took time to communicate.
Right. And, you know, that is the greatest thing, because he, of course, he's all powerful. But he, for lack of a better term, he brings himself down to our level, or brings us up to his level, so that we can talk one-on-one with him. And that just, there's a comfort level in that is just amazing.
You didn't have to correct yourself. He did bring himself down to our level, not to our sinful level, but he left heaven and came in our neighborhood. He became one of us. Charles, you are a dad. Sorry, Charles one, Charles two, Charles three. You are a dad. You can relate to knowing the answer, but yet taking the time to just talk with your kids so that there is relationship building.
Right, right. And it's something that you said that was so empowering. that you said to get on the level with him, get on that same level with him. And it's something that, you know, I have a son and a daughter, but it's something that when your children are going through something, when they're faced with life situations, or even if it's a fall off of the bike, to stop and engage.
Yes.
Get down, number one, to let them know it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I believe that's what you're saying. That's what Jesus did, knowing the answer before he even
asked. Of course he did, yes.
But to give him that comfort and knowing, I'm here.
Yes.
I want you to know that it's going to be all right.
Yes.
You know, so I believe that that is something that, to me, that's a powerful thing of being a father, knowing that you can bring that type of engagement and comfort to your children, letting them know that it's going to be okay.
And we have the best model to work from, Jesus himself. Right. Look at the many times, every time Jesus asked a question, you look through the Gospels, it was never to get information, but it was always to improve communication and relationship. You remember the two guys on the road to Emmaus? Yes. What are you guys talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. And they said,
were
have
wondering
you not
who he was?
Yeah. Have you not heard? Right. And he said, "What are you? What things?" Open-ended question. Open the door for a conversation. Right. And what an amazing God we serve! What an amazing God! So, but there's something else. There is something else. So he asked the dad, "How long has he been like that?" And dad said, "From childhood." I know some dads, and we had one on here. Mike even shared his story. If you have a child with a special need, this isn't something that is going away necessarily as they grow. It stays with them. So dad has been grappling with these difficulties raising a son from childbirth. And I believe it is an amazing thing, and I'm speaking to you dads and father figures out there who you may have a child who the school keeps calling you. They send them home, and you're wondering what's wrong with this child. Sometimes they really need to be evaluated, not to be given medication necessarily, but to find out what is wrong, so it could be addressed.
Right. I've known special needs, and I use that term loosely because everybody has special needs. But I've known children that were so intelligent, but you just had to figure out the best way to bring that out.
Right.
Because not everybody learns at the same level or the same pace or the same way. So we just have to find the way for that person to learn.
How they see the world.
Yeah. I believe that question, I believe that question is so powerful because I believe when Jesus asked the question, how long has he been like this? The focus wasn't just so much how long has the child been suffering, but dad, how long have you been coping with this? And again, so insightful of our wonderful counselor, which is what he is.
You know, it came to me sometimes when you have to chastise the child or you have to spank a child, as they did back in the day, when you would tell the child, this is going to hurt me more than it hurts you. I don't think they necessarily believed it, but you can see it and you can hear it in the words of the dad, how much he has been suffering along with his child.
Right.
The part I really want to get to and then bring in Charles number two is when Jesus assured the dad in verse 24 that the child is going to be okay. And the dad said, listen to this, it's so profound. Lord, I believe. Help thou my unbelief. Now, you would have thought it would be two different sentences, but it's one sentence. Lord, I believe. And you would thought, okay, good, thumbs up. But then he said, help thou my unbelief.
Yes.
And nowhere do we see where Jesus rebuked him for that. Because dads, God wants us to be honest about where we are at spiritually.
Yes.
You know this old saying about fake it till you make it. Don't play that with Jesus. Just faith it until you make it, as opposed to fake it until you make it. We just need to admit, and we don't always get the space to admit, especially if you're in a position of leadership. You dare not say you're struggling. You better not. And so many pastors end up messing up big time because they're running on empty because they always have to pretend everything is okay. Right. This dad did the exact opposite. He said, Jesus, I want to believe, but I'm struggling.
Yes.
help thou my unbelief.
Yes. And you know, that goes back to the vulnerability that we always talk about that men have to have. Because even I think of the situation where the children of Israel were in a battle and Moses was there, and as long as he held his arms up, they were prevailing, but his arms would get tired. Mm-hmm. That's where you need other people to help you.
Right. Other dads.
Whether it's a layman, whether it's a minister, whether it's a pastor. But as followers, we also need to not judge, because especially as pastors, and you know, you pour yourself out so much, and there are times where you will get weary, and that's where us as laymen and as members have to uphold you.
Yeah.
Right. And be focused enough to know when that person's getting tired.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yes.
Because we're so expected to know the answers, to have all the answers, to work everything out. And it's like we have an automatic recharge when we don't.
No,
but
don't.
To be vulnerable enough to say, you know what, brother, can you help me?
Yes.
You know, I'm tired. But also to have a brother
that's who's willing.
To be willing and keen enough to see, okay, I see you getting tired.
Yeah.
Let me step in to do what I can do to strengthen you, to uphold you.
Yeah.
And to carry you if I have to.
Oh, yes.
And it's definitely a two-way street, because if you're offering to help, but pride makes me say, no, I can't have it while my hands are down on, down on the floor instead of up, then I'm fooling myself and messing it up for everybody else.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're
so
foolish, man.
This dad said and did something that I believe is so appropriate for all of us. Strive to get to where we need to be. Lord, I believe, but admit where we're at and when we need help. And I believe there's a principle there. I believe Jesus honors an honest doubter more than a superficial believer.
Mm. That's a great statement.
This guy admitted it. So, Charles, let me ask you. Charles, number two. You work in an industry that everybody needs. Everybody needs. Not everybody needs a social worker. Not everybody needs an attorney. Not everybody needs a specialist in certain areas. But you work in a field that everybody needs. You, I often say, and I'm not joking, he works with dead people.
Yes.
Ones come along the way.
Okay,
right now,
some living ones come along. What would you describe? How do you describe the field that you? Because people come to you when they have a loved one who has died, or makes plans for their loved ones and themselves. What would you describe your field under? What umbrella?
Well, we're talking about the spiritual walk of things. It is ministry.
Oh, okay.
I don't take that lightly, because there are so many people you're dealing. Going back to another word we said as well just a few moments ago, vulnerability.
Mm.
You're at a point in people's lives when they're vulnerable. Mm-hmm. They're lost. They're weak. They don't know the answers. You know, I'm at a portion of their lives where they're trusting me to help carry them through their most vulnerable point of life.
Mm.
Because at that moment, you're trusting me with your most valuable possession.
Yes.
Whether it be a parent, a child, a spouse, a sibling. It's like you giving me the keys to your car and saying, okay, I'm going to let you use my car to go to the grocery store or whatever. You're expecting me to take care of your car just as good or better than you do.
Yes.
You know, my grandfather told me something many, many years ago growing up that, you know, I take to heart, and this is my daily motivation, that if you don't want to eat it, don't plant it.
Hmm.
So with what I do in funeral service, I always try to put myself in the position of, you know what, this could be me in your seat.
Mm.
This could be me in your position. What I do today is not always for me. Talking about fathers, I'm planting a seed of hope and hopefully return that I may not be able to eat everything from that tree of the seed that I plant, but that my son and daughter can pull from what I plant today.
Mm.
So being in this industry, you know, yes, it is funeral service. Some people look at it as
morbid
and stay away from me and this, that, and the other. But as you said, it's something that everyone is going to face. You know, we plan for retirement, vacation. Those are things that you might not make it to. But death is something that is sure, that we all are going to face one day or even personally deal with. So I count it, you know, getting to the short version of it, I count it an honor to be in the field that I represent.
How long have you been in this field?
Oh, wow. I've been in it all of my life. My grandfather was a funeral director, going back to having an impactful father. My grandparents were very instrumental in raising me. So my grandfather was like my superhero. And I always wanted to do everything that he did and do it the way that he did it. He was that example for me. So following in his footsteps, I wanted to do what he did. Now, none of his children wanted anything to do with funeral service or anything of the sort. Yeah. But him being who he was in my life, I wanted to follow in his footsteps. So that's how I became a part of it. Now, being graduating from school, being actually licensed and certified to be a funeral director and embalmer, I would say now it's been 17 years.
Oh, wow.
That I've been a licensed funeral director.
So let's go back a little bit. Your granddad was your main male figure, or was it granddad and dad?
I would say, again, it's a long story.
We'll have you back.
I'm going to try to make it short as I can. My parents had me when they were in their freshman year of college.
Okay.
So instead of them studying, they were doing some other things. Mm. So being the man that my grandfather was, he stepped in. My grandmother said, you know what? We're going to help you. Finish your schooling. We're going to take him, you know, and we're going to be a part of his raising. So when my parents finished school, of course, they came back, you know, anticipating to take the child back. But grandma said, no, you don't know anything about raising children. Go on. You know, we got him. Yeah. So that's how I became a part of my grandparents' lives. And my parents are still living. God bless them. And I thank God for them every day. But my grandparents are no longer here. Mm. They're both resting now. And I do have, even still to this day, a strong conviction and obligation to them, though that they're gone and they're sleeping in their graves, what they invested in me. I feel every day that if I don't repay them with what I could do to make my family's lives, my children's lives, this world a better place for what they took the time to invest into me.
Mm.
I get a little choked up even still to this day to talk about it. Just the type of people that they were.
Did you participate, like, organizing their own funeral?
I was.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and that was tough, but I felt that that was my gesture to them to say thank you in some way.
Charles, before I bring you in, let me ask you a question. In ministry, in social work, any sort of people-oriented field, there is always the risk of what they call compassion fatigue. How do you, day in, day out, week in, week out, have people come to you crying, mourning? How do you maintain that balance between, yeah, I hear you, I'm so sorry, then next, and move on to the, how do you, in Jesus's day, they hired professional mourners, man. Like, really, there were those who did that for a job.
And you have some now that do it for free.
That's something for free.
They just carry on, you know.
But how do you maintain that? I've seen you and your staff, and quite honestly, it doesn't seem fake to me.
It's something that physically, yes, many days I do get tired. Physically, yes. But there's a drive inside of me that goes back to, again, as I said earlier, that was invested in me. I'm going to be where you are one day. And that part of me, of my inner man, overrides even what I might be physically feeling at that moment, even what I might be mentally thinking about or dealing with from home, children, life, personal expectations. I have to put myself aside because I have an obligation. I have a responsibility. So that helps me. I can only speak for me in this aspect. That is what gives me my drive to know that, hey, you don't have to trust me, but here you are. Mm. I have a responsibility to fulfill your expectations of me.
I'm not sure we're going to finish this conversation in this one go, because there are a few questions that are swirling in my head right now. One, the staff you work for, because you have to maintain and keep them. But then you have a family to go home to. You don't go home because you have just had a cruise and you're all up here. You just buried somebody's loved one. Where do you make that switch between daddy's home or daddy's home? And you sound almost dead as the person you just buried. I want to talk about that. But before I do, Charles, what are your thoughts? You have buried both your parents.
Yes. And, you know, it was a privilege because I left to go to college at 17 and I came back at 45. And I had four great years, almost 4 years with my dad before he passed. And it was very emotional. I remember our pastor at the time was Bishop Glenford Hutchinson, and we were in the hospital when Dad was starting to transition. And he came up and he put his hand on my shoulder and said, "Well, Brother Charles, you're the man of the house now." And I was like, "Wait a minute, whoa." Now, I was 49 years old, and I'm like, "Wait a minute, I'm not ready to take that position." But I thank God that I had those years with my dad to reconnect, because even though you have communication with telephones, I wasn't in his presence for close to 28 years, so I was able to reconnect. And then with my mother, I had almost 10 years with her, and I was blessed to be there when they took their last breath, and I watched them transition on to glory. So that was... It wasn't as sad because they were both Christians, and I knew they were going home to their mansion. I was sad for me because, I'm going to miss them, but I was glad for them because there's no more pain. Mm. There's no more suffering. They're going to be in eternal glory. So I count that as a privilege.
And it is to be there to be with them both when they took their last breath. Yes. If someone has not ever been in that space to be there.
I have never sat beside somebody
and it was
who died.
It was particularly powerful because my dad was such a strong presence, even though he was suffering the effects of a stroke the last 15, 16 years of his life. And he was lying there and I was down by his ear, whispering in his ear. And it was like he was holding on. And I whispered, I kissed him on the forehead, and I whispered in his ear. And I said, "Dad, it's okay." He said, "You can go home now." And a single tear came down his eye. And I was like, okay, he heard me. And I think that was validation for him.
Yeah.
And maybe 30 seconds later, he took his last breath.
You took that role of the man of the house. You know?
Yes.
You say once a man, twice a child. He was able to be
in
that position of, you know, hey, you're in charge. I trust your word.
Yeah.
You know.
Charles one or two.
I'm two.
You're two. I have so many more questions to ask you. I want to talk about some of the practical stuff, like cremation versus burial. But before we go there, let's get to some, you're new to this, that is, this is your first time, man. So I'm going to allow you, I'm going to sort of give you a break this morning, but you're meant to bring a joke, man. You're meant to bring a joke. We have DGJ around here. Dad's got jokes. We're going to have to continue this conversation, but let me hear your joke.
I had a joke in my notes, and I believe our colleague Bill somehow hacked into my
really?
Notes.
Really? Yeah. Oh, that's a joke in itself.
But I'll just say that great minds think alike. I'll say that.
Okay, then.
So here it is. How do you follow Will Smith in the snow?
How do you follow Will Smith in the snow?
He's a man in black.
No. Oh. You follow the fresh prince.
Oh,
I was close. I was in the neighborhood. I was Men in Black. Right?
Well, before you say that was good, just hear mine. Thank you. Reserve judgment. So what did one slice of bread say to the other before the race? What did one slice of bread say to the other before the race?
I don't know that.
Your toast.
Oh, wow.
Your toast.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
You got the symbols over there?
Now, Bill also has the laugh track. So,
okay. You know. Well, even our producer, Dave, laughed at mine. So, yeah, I'm winning today.
Okay.
Listen, we have less than 5 minutes. We are going to continue this conversation. By the way, thank you, Charles Wan, for that presentation that you made to your church yesterday. We are looking. We had a plan, Charles, too. We had a plan to enroll 1,000 dads in the month of August, Dad Up 1,000. We didn't get near there. We got a lot of responses. A lot of moms said, I like this program, but we didn't get the 1,000 that we had hoped for. But you started off with a bang yesterday because you were at your church. It was Family and Friends Day, and you made a presentation, and I'm getting responses. So
yeah, that was actually, it was pretty emotional. Just it was to see a lot of family and friends that I hadn't seen in a while, and I actually met two cousins that I had never met yesterday. So I was a little nervous because I had never talked to a packed house, but once I got going, it just flowed from what I know. So nice. I'm blessed that people heard and people are responding, and I hope they continue to respond.
I hope so. Awesome. We're asking for the support in three ways from our listening audience. One, we ask for their prayers. We do crave their prayers. Two, we crave and ask for their hours, at least 1 hour per week. We will utilize that 1 hour to work with a child who does not have a father or a father figure. And thirdly, we ask for their dollars. You can't forget those three, your prayers, hours, and your dollars. I want to thank the sponsor. He doesn't want to be listed right now, but one of our wonderful listeners sponsored today's show. And as a matter of fact, he has gone more than above and beyond. He has to sponsor quite a number of days this month, and we're grateful. Thank you so very much for joining us. Dads, father figures out there, we want to hear from you. In fact, for this month, we would really like to have a conversation with single dads and stay-at-home dads. Mm-hmm. So we're asking you, moms and mother figures out there, if you know of a son of yours or a son-in-law or whomever who is raising a child or children on his own, we would like you to give him our information so he can call us up. In the meantime, dads, father figures, continue doing what you are doing. Dads matter.
Yes.
Dads matter. And when we are absent, it impacts our children in so many different ways. Continue to pray for us, because as we enter our second we're looking forward to God's provision, because we are building this plane as we fly.
Yes.
Charles Spaeth, thank you so much for joining us. We will need to have you back in, because we have loads more questions for you.
It's an honor. I'd be glad.
And Charles Wan, you are always here, brother. Thank you.
There's no place I'd rather be.
At this time of the day.
Yes. There you go.
Have a great day. Fathers, father figures, you matter.
Dad up.
Thanks for joining us today on the Dad Up Radio Show. We would like to hear your feedback, comments, or suggestions. Also, if you would like to support us with your prayers, hours, and dollars, you can reach us at 561-229-2379. You can call or text us at 561-229-2379 or email us at dadup@thefatherchildconnection.org. That's dadup@thefatherchildconnection.org.